let me in. Shiba shiba. I wanna be closer to you. Shiba shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. There are lots of things to enjoy in this world. There are cannabis-related events that happen in and around the city. Here to talk about one of those events, I'd like to welcome DJ Dank. Hello.
Hey, Marilyn. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing fine. All excited about Bongo Bingo.
Okay, so for our listeners who may not have heard about it before, what is Bongo Bingo?
Bongo Bingo is drag cannabis bingo, which means we basically play bingo, give away weed prizes, and there's also drag going on, and it's just a good time for the cannabis community to get together and have a good time.
Okay, so tell me how you put all those three things together, because you have it. I mean, it sounds just so so typically San Franciscan.
Well, basically, you know, there has been drag bingo and bingo bingo and everything, and I just realized it really wasn't cannabis drag bingo. And you know, as the cannabis industry has taken, you know, come into effect and all that over the years, and my joke has always been like, well, it's a new country, just add the word weed to it or a cannabis, and it turns into like a whole new genre.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started playing with that, and you know, I produced drag shows for years, and so I knew the drag queens. And also, since I had DJed so many San Francisco drag events, I was like, well, everybody's stoned the whole time anyway. Why not mix them together? And so that's what we started doing. And so basically, we are at Mission Cannabis Club every second and fourth Saturdays of the month from mm-hmm. 6 to 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
You go in, you get your bingo card or as many cards as you want, and we start off with a few drag numbers. Then we have a whole half of, you know, bingo, you know, playing different kinds of bingo. You win, and we have, you know, bags of prizes with cannabis in them.
Mm-hmm.
We take a break, come back, have some more drag, and then we finish the night out with bingo. It has been going on for about 3 years now.
Now, when I think of bingo, I think of little old ladies with those little stamper thingies.
So little stamper things? Oh, yeah, totally.
So do you have a contingency of little old stoners?
Oh, yes. What I find very fascinating, and I even remember this when I was younger, because when I was a kid, I used to go play bingo with my parents at the country club in Mount Pleasant, Texas, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I just loved it, worshipped it. And you know, here it's fascinating because yes, we do have a giant contingency of stoner seniors
uh-huh.
that play, but we get people from across the spectrum. A few weeks ago, there was a girl there celebrating her 21st birthday.
Oh wow!
With her friends.
Uh huh.
And we have just it runs the gamut from, you know, 21 to 81.
Nice. Now, you said that there will be some drag performances. So who are these dragsters that we will be seeing if we go do your Bongo Bingo?
Well, my my co-host is the Pristine Condition,
mm-hmm.
and she and I have been doing shows all the way back, dating to the Toolbox Show Off, Meow Mix, all the ones we grew up going on. So she and I have been doing shows together for about 15 years. She is amazing and always so entertaining. And then we have a weekly, you know, a biweekly guest. And so this Saturday, we're going to be at Mission Cannabis Club from 6 to 9, which would be March 28th.
Mm-hmm.
And our guest is Lucy Borden.
Mm.
And Lucy Borden, I know from Charlie Horse at the Cinch way back when I first was like, you know, first in San Francisco and experiencing the drag world. And she was always one of my favorite performers. And lately she's turned into a stoner. So now she's coming out and hanging out at Bongo Bingo and performing.
So what you're saying is that you've been a bad influence.
I'm a terrible influence when it comes to weed. People come to me every time, all the time. They'll say, I saw you the other night. You brought a joint out. We got stoned. I woke up the next day, all my food is gone. It was just the wrappers in front of the TV. It's all your fault. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but you have to understand there are some side effects to smoking the weed within.
I understand. So you mentioned Lucy Borden. Who else will be in attendance that will be wowing your audience?
Well, we only have one special. We only have two drag performers per show.
Oh, okay.
I don't want the show to get too bogged down in drag because people want to win weed.
Okay.
So we always have just two performers that do two numbers. But other performers, we have a really great coterie of performers right now. Mm-hmm. Not only do I have Lucy Borden, I also have Abortia Clinic. And she is from L.A. and is coming down, and she's involved in the Dragula world and that whole L.A. drag scene. She comes up and performs, and she does some crazy looks. Both Lucy and Abortia do crazy goth looks, which is always really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of our favorites is Andale Andale, who I've known since the Toolbox years and Meow Mix. And what I like about her is that she brings that Latin flair to the show. And here we are in the middle of the mission, and it's great to have, like, you know, a Mexican drag queen doing Latin themed numbers for the people in the neighborhood. I always think that's really cool to have that. But those kind of like our main performers right now.
Okay. Over the how many years have you been doing Bongo Bingo, by the way?
You know, I think we're reaching up on over three. I started it at Mo Green's a few years ago, and then we moved to Mission Cannabis Club about 2.5 years ago. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's probably about 3.5 years at this point. But time goes when you're having a good time. You know, it's one of those things. I never get tired of getting ready and dragging my soundboard and my computer and all my equipment down to Mission Cannabis Club and getting it set up. It's just, it's great to give to the cannabis community, and it's just always a great feeling, and I enjoy it, and I plan to do it as long as they'll let me do it.
Excellent. So what actually is the state of cannabis in the Bay Area? I mean, is it legal? Is it decriminalized?
You know, we have it very lucky in the Bay Area. We have more smoking lounges and places to partake outside of just going outside and smoking once you buy the weed at the dispensary
mm-hmm.
than really any other place in the country. Even L.A. L.A. has some really nice cannabis lounges. But up in our area of the country, we have the most per capita of anywhere else. So we are very, very lucky to have all the smoking opportunities we have.
Is it a possibility that it would become oversaturated?
Well, from what I understand, they did put a moratorium on new spaces for mm-hmm. a while.
Okay.
And then, of course, right now, what we're really excited about is, and it's working through its way through the government right now, which is being able to do cannabis cafes, where we also sell food and beverages that aren't cannabis.
So
then you can go to the cannabis cafe, buy a joint, and then get a ham sandwich and some chips and fries and a milkshake or something. And, you know, you can choose what you have, cannabis eyes, and to what extent.
I would imagine that given that cannabis makes people have the munchies, it seems like the perfect pairing.
Oh, we're talking macaroni and cheese here. You know, we're talking macaroni and cheese, apples and peanut butter. I mean, these things go together perfectly. So, yes, and I'm super excited about that. And so I think that's going to be changing in the next 6-8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll start seeing more of these cannabis cafes hopefully pop up. I really think it's a great opportunity. I've always said that I felt like the state and the city has dismissed cannabis as some kind of like unwanted stepchild, when in reality it is a giant, you know, cash cow that can bring so much to the city if it embraces it the way we've embraced wine and the Napa area.
Okay. So getting back to Bongo Bingo,
mm-hmm.
What do you think is the most outrageous act that you've had there?
A performance act?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let me think here.
And while you're thinking, you're listening to.
I'm not to think all the way through. They're always so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it's always when Pristine does something kind of offbeat and weird. I love it. I mean, last week she was doing Gilda Radner as Emily LaTella, if you remember her.
Yes,
Starring Out Live.
Yes.
And I just love it when we kind of teach the people in the audience that there's more to drag than just RuPaul.
Mm-hmm.
That in reality, drag is a is an instrument of rebellion, and it's an instrument of education.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do different ways. It doesn't have to be the top 40 song or their Lady Gaga song. It can be a piece of, you know, vocalization of a speech or a, you know, I've seen queens do performances from Golden Girls speeches from the TV show. You know, that's mm-hmm. the night the lights went out in Georgia, you know. And those are, I always like when they do something a little bit offbeat that's not just a regular song.
Sure, sure, sure. So when and where is it again?
Well, I am at Mission Cannabis Club, which is right down in Mission, between 20th and 21st, not too far from the Alamo Draft House.
Okay.
And they have an amazing upstairs smoking lounge up there. And so, yeah.
Okay. And
we are there every second and fourth Saturdays of the month
mm-hmm.
from 6 to 9.
And how has the neighborhood embraced the club?
They love it. As far as I can tell, you know, it's one of the primo spots to pick up weed. There are two or three different dispensaries down there. But, and you know, the Mission Cannabis Club is so welcoming. They love having us there. I can tell they get excited every time we show up because I can only imagine what they hear from downstairs and what's going on up there. But no, it's all really good vibes. I love going down to the Mission. I've never had any problems. It's always been really cool. And it's a really nice space. Everybody, if you haven't been there, you should come check it out.
Okay. And then I know that you do other things besides Bongo Bingo, because I know you did like the San Francisco Squares. Do you have any other events in the offing?
Well, if anybody was looking for something to do tonight, I'm going to be at Mission Cannabis Club from 6 to 9 p.m. playing Italo Disco with my buddy Vitor from Brazil, who's playing Brazilian disco. It's our monthly disco lab that's going to go on. That's free. All you have to do is, like, buy something at Mission Cannabis Club and come upstairs and hang out for a while. We're just playing music. But in the future, I have two things. We're having a new San Francisco Squares Pride Edition with the center square being Bruce Valanche.
Mm.
And we already have some great, great performers from San Francisco personalities who are already booked up, so I'll be announcing that next month. And then I am also creating a new show for Mission Cannabis Club called Weedo,
mm-hmm.
which is a combination of Price is Right, pricing games, trivia, and Plinko.
What is Plinko?
Plinko is the big board with all the little pegs in it,
oh.
and you get at the top of it, and you drop the little round piece down it, and it pop, 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 pop,
yeah,
pop,
yeah, yeah,
pop,
yeah, 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 yeah.
And it goes all the way down it until it pops down into your prize at the bottom.
So basically, you've just
famous from Saturday Night from Price is Right.
And so you're doing sort of a mashup of everybody's favorite game shows.
I'm basically ripping off Price is Right.
Yeah.
But I've been ripping off game shows for most of my career because I grew up, you know, as a kid, I would actually act sick so I could stay at home and watch game shows all day. Oh, and make pudding. Those are my two favorite things.
And your parents never saw through that?
Well, there was the week I decided that it was Elvis week and I was going to act sick every day.
Uh-huh.
To watch the afternoon movie every day.
Okay.
And by Thursday, my mom was very doubtful that I was sick, but she went along with it. I don't know.
I love that. Okay, so we're almost out of time. So one more time for Bongo Bingo. When and where?
Bongo Bingo is every second and fourth Saturday of the month at Mission Cannabis Club, which is at Mission and 20th. And, yeah.
And how do people
and
get
if
tickets?
If they want to follow us, we're on Instagram at Bongo Bingo SF. And I am DJ Dank SF.
All right. And if people want to get tickets, do they walk up or do they have to order them?
You just walk up to the door. We take cash, Venmo, PayPal. You know, if we can suck money out of it, we will. So, yeah, it doesn't, you don't have to buy tickets ahead of time. Just come on up to the front door. See our good friend Veronica up the front. She'll be glad to take care of you.
All right. Well, DJ Dank, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, I always enjoy talking to you. So anytime.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. Yes, it is. And in keeping with the theme of the interview, this is Buster Bailey and Light Up.
And the good times roll. Let the pleasure pop. Now let's take a stroll.
Light up.
Let's all get mellow.
Light up.
Get smoke in your eyes.
Light up.
Get hip, I say, fella.
Light up.
Say, what is this jive?
Light up.
Let's all get ready.
Light up.
I know how you feel.
Light up.
Now don't be afraid. You'll find what I mean in any old field.
Pop.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Blow.
8, 9, 10, and then 11.
Hold up!
Now get your day going.
Flame up!
I'm saying that's the thing.
Light up!
Don't let that man get you. Just pop on your cig and blow the smoke ring.
That's Buster Bailey and Light Up from the Reefer Song CD. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, as you know, I'm all about the dance, and I am so excited to have from the Oakland Ballet, the artistic director, I'd like to welcome Graham Lustig. Hello.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being on the show today. So before we get into the upcoming shows, tell us a little bit about the Oakland Ballet and your involvement with it.
Well, I'm the artistic director. I've been working with the company since 2010, but the company is 60 years old. We're celebrating our 60th anniversary season.
Wow.
And so it's very exciting to be part of the future of the company and also to be celebrating the past.
So you got involved in, you said 2010?
That's right, yes.
And do you remember the first show that you did?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The first show I did was something that everybody's heard of before.
Which is?
Happens at Christmas every year. Can you guess what it is?
So that's sort of a staple for all the ballet companies, right?
It sure is, yes. Yes, it is.
And when you first did it, did you feel like, oh, not this again, or finally, I get to do this one?
Well, I have a very extraordinary story because I grew up in London,
mm-hmm.
and I danced both in Holland at the Dutch National Ballet and then later for the Birmingham Royal Ballet in England.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of those companies staged a Nutcracker.
Ah.
So I didn't actually have the experience like most dancers here who are, you know, at 7 years old, they're something in the Nutcracker, and then by the time they're 17, they've done 20 different other roles in the Nutcracker.
Right.
So I came in feeling ink. I thought the music by Tchaikovsky was so inspiring, and I came in and I told the dancers, I love this music, and they were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. We've heard it since we were 10. So, yeah, I still find the score magical. I think Tchaikovsky did an incredible job. And, of course, the Nutcracker is, as you say, it's a staple, but it's a staple for a very important reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think it ties a community together. Most Nutcracker productions, professional ones, have students in them. Students have the opportunity to work alongside professionals. In our case, they have the opportunity to go to the Paramount Theatre and perform with the symphony orchestra. I mean, that's pretty good when you're 10 years old, you know,
yeah,
to be on stage like that. So you gain insights into how productions are put together, not much more than just, you know, what it's like to be a dancer. And then, you know, you get a cohort of young people who come back year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they form strong friendships as well, so that we become a Nutcracker family is what I call it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are many reasons, and it's a great story, ballet, to introduce people to the world of dance.
Well, then I have, so because you hadn't had a background in doing the Nutcracker, did you go into it in a cold sweat, like, I don't know what I'm doing?
No, not at all, no. I was deeply inspired.
Oh.
I took the idea that the story is focused on a young woman who basically is given this strange gift. It's a Nutcracker, and she falls asleep, and she has a dream. And the dream takes her on a journey in which she eventually falls in love for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, when in the original, many productions are Victorian in nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's hoop skirts and bonnets, and you know, the costumes limit the dancing to a degree. So I thought more of a time at the beginning of the 20th century when women were fighting for the vote. No longer corsets, shorter skirts, flowing gowns, riding bicycles. That's kind of when I thought the young woman might feel more empowered to take charge of her own destiny.
Mm.
So that's, I said, it's old enough to feel romantic, but, you know, it's still modern enough to implant some different ideas. And you know, I've got some fun ideas in mind that nobody else has, at least not that I know of. For instance, in the snow scene, often a beautiful dance with all the corps de ballet and their immaculate tutus making these exquisite lines and formations, and the snow is coming down. And I just thought, well, you know, in the production, rather brilliantly, Tchaikovsky wrote a children's choir into that snow scene to make these voices that are so ethereal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, when I hear children, I want to see children. So I have dancing snowballs in my first scene. Nobody else has snowballs, as far as I know. Anyway,
that.
So there are some ways that you can still take an old story and retell it for a new time, and you know, give a new generation of dancers opportunities, you know, to tell stories in a different way.
So you've got a story that you're going to tell called Double Happiness. And it says Double Happiness will feature two world premieres. So tell me all about that.
In 2022, we began showcasing Asian American Pacific Islander creatives, composers, choreographers, and designers. We began at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center, and it has been recognized throughout the world as an incredibly unique program. Practically nobody else in America, especially in the world of ballet, is showcasing AAPI artists in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Dancing Moons Festival, and this is our fifth festival. And as you just mentioned, yes, we're celebrating Double Happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title of one of the works. Phil Chan is our artist in residence. And he has taken something very unusual, which is called, they're called the Shanghai Songbirds. Basically, in the 40s and the 50s, in China, there were wonderful performers who would take sort of, I don't know, bossa novas and tangos, and they would sing them in Mandarin.
Mm.
So you have Chinese language, but you have the musical world of South America. And that's that fusion, which is so interesting. So Phil's piece is really, it's a romp through the sound world of the Shanghai Songbirds. And then Wei Wang is one of our favorite choreographers. He's returning again. He's actually a principal dancer with the San Francisco Ballet, exquisite artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I see real talent in him as a choreographer, so I really want to nurture that. And he's made a piece called Child's Play. Now, you think a game of musical chairs might be quite, you know, quite fun for the ballet, but let me tell you, there's a sort of order of chaos that breaks out as the chairs get fewer and fewer on stage and the dancers get more and more desperate in a fun and entertaining way. Elaine Kudo has made a piece called Opposites Distract. which is very fun. It's two couples, and, you know, there's a little interplay between the two of them. It's very fast, it's very dynamic, and the dancers look amazing doing it. And we open with a very calm and kind of poetic pas de deux by Phil Chan, which is called Amber Waves. Mm-hmm. So that's our double happiness program. In a world that might not always feel very happy, you can come to the ballet and be guaranteed a smile or two.
I love it. I love it. And you're also doing Angel Island later in May, correct?
Yes. Yes, Marilyn. Yes, absolutely. This is a really important work. The biggest undertaking the ballet has ever taken on, and that is inspired by the protest poetry that was carved into the walls at the Angel Island immigration station by Chinese detainees who were held there, you know, for weeks, sometimes months, even years, mm-hmm. due to the Chinese Exclusion Act. You know, they were treated very, very badly. Composer Huang Ro took his inspiration from this poetry, was carved into the wooden walls, and has set it for a 16-piece choir and string quartet. Seven choreographers created different sections, different poems in this work, and it's a journey. We start off, we see a group of travelers. They've got blankets, they've got cases. We know they're striving to get somewhere. And as the piece unfolds, we understand the sort of fragility of life, mm-hmm. the lack of security in taking on a great boating trip. You go to the other side of the world, you don't know how it's going to go. You don't even, if you're going to be accepted into that new country to build that new life that you envisage for your family, mm-hmm. for your future. Mm-hmm. And so the journey is a fantastical one. And we finish with one dance that is about the power of the human spirit overcoming challenge. Mm-hmm. And finally, there's a kind of almost like a meditation at the end, with the whole company dancing across the stage in simple steps, but in waves. And these waves of humanity just keep flowing one over the other. And at the very end, one by one, they settle, they kneel on the ground, and it's covered in dry ice, so it looks like clouds. And mm-hmm. the choreographer said, each person, a mountain. And so it's a fantastic journey. It's 90 minutes long, and we'll be presenting that at the Herbst Theatre on May 8th and 9th. Prior to that, April 30th through May 1st, we are going to be at the Great Star Theatre, mm-hmm. which is one of California's oldest venues in the heart of Chinatown, San Francisco. And as you maybe already know, this coming weekend, we're at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center for Double Happiness. So, Thursday through Saturday.
So where do you do your rehearsing? Where do you do your rehearsing? Since you're going to all these different theaters, is there one main place that you normally perform, or are you a traveling ballet company?
We adjust our venue to the type of program that we're presenting.
Okay.
Obviously, something like the Nutcracker and our Luna Mexicana, our Dia de los Muertos, our Day of the Dead performance, we do at the Paramount Theater because we can draw, you know, 2,500 people. But when we're doing a smaller show, both smaller in terms of cast, but mm-hmm. in also terms of program, mm-hmm. we go to other smaller venues. You know, the Great Star seats about 450, and the Herbst, 850. So, like many dance companies, we don't have one home. We perform in a variety of different day locations.
Okay. So, where do you get your pool of dancers?
Well, fortunately, I've had dancers who've been with me for 8-9 years now. But we hold auditions, and of course, dancers nowadays, they don't even have to show up in person. They just send you their video link, and mm-hmm. you can see their work, and then begin a dialogue with them. So that's how it's done currently. You don't have to actually show up and put a number on like in the old good old days, you know.
Now, how do you feel about that? Because I would imagine there are pros and cons of any type of audition process.
Oh, I feel good about it. I don't just look at a video, but I definitely interview the dancer and just find out who they are. And, you know, what their goals are, and if our goals are aligned, if we can be a supportive environment to help them grow as an artist, I think that's really, really important.
Okay, well, can you tell me a little bit about any of the dancers who are in your Double Happiness and Dancing Moon Festival?
Well, as I mentioned, I've got some company members who've been with me for 8 or 9 years, like Ashley Sapir, Jasmine Quezada, and of course we have a crop of new dancers as well, which is very exciting to bring to the stage. What I really love is how integrated, how quickly the dancers integrate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They are so kind, so supportive. It's really marvelous to see that there's really a lot of good energy in the room. And that's kind of, I always say that the studio is a kind of sacred space, and we kind of really need to treat it that way. It's difficult to get funding to pay for dancers, to pay for art,
mm-hmm.
to pay for theaters, to pay for orchestras. So the time that we spend together is incredibly precious.
Okay. And now for people out there who know someone who's an aspiring dancer, what kind of advice can you offer that person who is just sort of dipping their foot in the dance world?
Well, are they a dancer who's 8 years old, or are they a dancer who's 18 years old? Because I'd give different advice.
Well, give me both.
Oh, well, I would say when you're 8 years old, go for everything you love. Do everything with the best passion that you have, and enjoy yourself. And at 8 years old, I would say enjoy it. Don't take it too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you're, 14, 15, 16, and you really are very determined to have a dance career, well, then you've got to be prepared to let other things go. You cannot do, could I be on the cheerleading team or do baseball and choir and play a musical instrument and do ballet, because ballet is going to overtake. If you've got to put so many hours in as a young dancer to get rather like skaters, that they have to do so many hours on the ice just to build the technical proficiency. Art comes later. And it's almost the same with young dancers. There's just such a rigorous training program in order to develop the physical strength to do all of the incredibly challenging steps and maneuvers that are asked of you. So I think that, deciding on your focus in life, if that is your passion, is a very important decision. And of course, speaking to your family, your friends, your parents, making sure you have their support, because nobody does this alone. We always need lots of supporters around us to encourage us, because there are always going to be challenges. You're always going to, twist your knee or stab your toe and you can't dance for a week or something like that. You've got to get over all of the physical injuries that might occur. And also sometimes the mental challenges. It's grueling to be a dancer. You have to have a huge amount of reserve, commitment. Everybody talks about, the kind of discipline it takes. But frankly, if you just show up, the discipline is already there. You just have to stand at the bar and begin your first plié, and discipline kicks in straight away.
I'd like you to expand on the statement that you made earlier, where you said art comes later.
Yes.
Technical proficiency. Talk a little bit about that, because you tend to think of people who are great at it as that they have a natural affinity and that artistry is there, but that doesn't sound like it's the case.
Well, did anybody pick up a trumpet and just play it the first time they put it in their hands? They made a lot of rude noises before they could make a nice note or two. So I think that's really the case. It's easy to assume, because we work so hard, as does a musician, as does any artist, to make their art look easy. That is the real skill.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to see a dancer huffing and puffing and groaning and looking like they can't, like the last, 100 meters of the marathon at the end of a solo. Nobody wants. You've got to get through it with elan. You've got to go through it like you could do it all over again. You create this illusion. So that's what we rehearse so hard to do. We do incredibly difficult moves, lifts, turns, jumps, slides. Even the quiet, slow stuff is very, very difficult to sustain unless you have incredible strength, core strength, training, balance, power, so many things. And of course, once you've the technique and the power is only there to be able to express yourself. So linking into who you are and how you'd feel about this step, how you feel about this solo, your own interpretation, your own musicality, that is what makes every artist compelling and individual.
I love that. So once again, for our listening audience, when and where for the Dancing Moons Festival, and where can how do they get tickets?
The best thing to do is to go to the Oakland Ballet website, www.oaklandballet.org. Mm-hmm. Ballet is B-A-L-L-E-T .org. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we are going to be performing at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center starting this Thursday, and we're there until Saturday. So, and then we'll be at the, we'll be at the Great Star Theater. Mm-hmm. Starting on the 30th of April through the 2nd of May. That's in San Francisco, Chinatown. And then the following weekend, we'll be performing Angel Island. That's with live music at the Herbst Theater. That's Friday, May the 8th. That's an evening performance at 7:30. And then Saturday, May the 9th at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Excellent.
Lots of wonderful dancing, lots of representation, lots of creativity, beauty, and also passion. And I think some incredible storytelling.
All right. Well, Graham Lustig, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Marilyn, for this invitation. Please come and see us. We'd love to dance for you.
I've already got my ticket, so.
Beautiful.
All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out the Dancing Moons Festival 2026. So enjoy it.
Daddy always thought that he married beneath him. That's what he said, that's what he said. When he proposed, he informed my mother he was probably her very last chance. And though she was 22, though she was 22, though she was 22, she married him. Life with my dad wasn't ever a picnic, more like a come-as-you-are. When I was 5, I remember my mother dug earrings out of the car. I knew that they weren't hers, but it wasn't something you'd want to discuss. He wasn't warm. Well, not to her. Well, not to us. But everything was beautiful at the ballet. Graceful men lift lovely girls in white. Yes, everything was beautiful at the ballet. I was happy at the ballet. That's when I started class. Up a steep and very narrow stairway to the voice like a metronome. Up a steep and very narrow stairway. It wasn't paradise. It wasn't paradise. It wasn't paradise. But it was home. Mother always said I'd be very attractive when I grew up, when I grew up. Different, she said, with a special something and a very, very personal flair. And though I was 8 or 9, though I was 8 or 9, though I was 8 or 9, I hated her. Now, different is nice, but it sure isn't pretty. Pretty is what it's about. I never met anyone who was different who couldn't figure that out. So beautiful, I'd never live to see. But it was clear, if not to her, well then to me, that everyone is beautiful at the ballet. Every prince has got to have his swan. Yes, everyone is beautiful at the ballet. I was pretty. Metronome up a steep and very narrow stairway. It wasn't
what they were for or against, really, except each other. I mean, I was born to save their marriage. But when my father came to pick my mother up at the hospital, he said, well, I thought this was going to help, but I guess it's not. Anyway, I did have a fantastic fantasy life. I used to dance around the living room with my arms up like this. My fantasy was that it was an Indian chief, and he'd say to me, Maggie, do you want to dance? And I'd say, Daddy, I would love to dance.
But it was clear when he proposed that I was born to have their marriage end well.
That's what he said.
That's what she said.
I used to dance around the living room.
He wasn't warm, not to her.
Is the original Broadway cast recording of At the Ballet from A Chorus Line. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, Mark Feringer's Dance Project SF is having a production that they're going to talk about right now. Here to talk about it, the eponymously named Mark Feringer. Welcome.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for being on the show today. So since your name is in the title, I'm just going to assume, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you are the founder of said Mark Feringer Dance Project SF.
Yes. I am the founder and artistic director of Mark Feringer Dance Project San Francisco. And I named the show Mark Feringer's Alice in Wonderland, not to be confused with everybody else's Alice in Wonderland.
Okay. So take me back in time. When did you decide to have a dance company? What was the thing that lit the flame under you?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what exactly did it. I've never imagined not having a dance company, even when I was young and dancing professionally. I danced in Brazil with the company called Cisne Negro Dance Company in São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
And from way back when, I've always said I was going to have a dance company without really understanding what I was saying.
Uh-huh.
Because putting a company together and running a company is not for the light-hearted, that's for sure. We founded this from Mark Feringer Dance Project SF. We founded in 1996.
Mm.
And so we're celebrating our 30th anniversary season this year. And it's, you know, like every other dance organization or arts organization, it's had a lot of ups and a lot of downs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we are, really happy to still be here and making more work and more dance and sharing it with the community of San Francisco.
Well, I got to say, you have to credit ignorance, because if people actually knew how much work the things they were thinking about doing took, they probably wouldn't do them. And so there's that beauty of not knowing until you're in the thick of it. And then by then it's too late and you just go with it.
Right. The ignorance is bliss thing really applies, right?
Yes, yes.
Because it looks like it could be possible, right? Until you're suddenly in the thick of it, and then now you're in the throes of the whole production thing, and you realize, oh my God, I didn't sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you do it again. You're like, well.
And you do it over and over.
Over and over again. This, for you, 30 times. So tell me a little bit, before we get into Mark Feringer's Alice in Wonderland, what was the first show? Do you have any recollection? What was that first show you did as the Mark Feringer dance project?
Project, yeah. It was produced by Chrissy Kiefer of Dance Mission. At the time, she was running something called Brady Street, which was a dance theater down in, I don't know what that area is called now, but on Brady Street in San Francisco.
Okay.
And she helped me produce my first show, my full evening show of my work.
And did it have a name or just, we're just dancing?
Yep. Just making it all happen. So I created dance. I sort of had started creating dances before we officially launched Mark Feringer Dance Project, right? That's kind of how the whole thing started. And, you know, all along the way, people kind of look like, oh, you know what, it's a one-off, or you're going to do it for a little bit. And then, you know, with funding the way it is, you know, for the arts and for dance. Many people told me that they didn't really believe it was going to go on. And for some reason, I always believed it would. And so, I think that's a true thing to expect. Like, people do work and they get going a little bit. It's really hard to maintain. Mm-hmm. And life goes on. And, you know, when funding dries up, it's really hard to keep it going. So in fairness to those people who thought it wouldn't make it, that is a true thing that could happen to lots of different companies.
And yet here you are on your 30th iteration. So let's talk about Mark Feringer's Alice in Wonderland. How does it differ from everybody else?
Well, I refer to it as an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I also have something called Nutcracker Suite that we do in the fall for the Christmas holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that one first, and it's sort of a 50-minute work, right, with live music. And I chose my favorite parts of the Hoffman tale, like the original Hoffman tale, and kind of told the story that way. And that went really well and really kind of built up an audience. So I thought, well, maybe we do a bookend to this and make an Alice in Wonderland for this. And it is similar in structure to that. I like the idea that Alice has a lot of agency and she can solve problems instead of confronting all these weird characters in Wonderland. She instead, you know, helps them sort out some of the challenges that they're facing. So I kind of took it that direction.
Okay. So tell me, who are the dancers that you are working with for this production?
Yes. Teresa Knudsen plays a role of Alice. She's also the executive director of Ballet 22, for those of you that go to that kind of ballet work, right? They do a season every summer. And we have Carlos Cinturo, and we have Jetta Martin, and we have Vincent Chavez, and Ryan Roland Smith. these are dancers that have been working with us on these other shows, mm-hmm. like Nutcracker Suites. And I made the role specifically for a different cast of dancers. So this year, it was a really interesting teaching the roles to these dancers that come in with completely different ways of looking at the role, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at your website, and the costumes and the sets are amazing. Tell me a little bit about the people behind those.
Yeah, so the sets are designed by Peter Crompton.
Mm-hmm.
He designs for a lot of companies around the Bay Area. We've just been really lucky. I've been working with Peter since 1990 or something. It's mm-hmm. like way back. And the costumes are designed by Stephanie Zarezis and Nicole Klegman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's projections that are used, and those are designed by Frederick Boulay, who also is our production manager.
Amazing. So that's Mark Feringer's Alice in Wonderland, and that is happening just the 2 days?
Yes, it's Saturday the 28th at 11 a.m. and at 2 p.m., and Sunday the 29th at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the Cullen Theater.
And that's at the Fort Mason Center for the Arts and Culture. And
yes.
How do people go about getting tickets?
FortMason.org/events.
Okay.
They just go to the website, click on it, and they can purchase their tickets there.
And then I also note that you are going to be dancing in at the park on April 25th. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. So I produce an event in Golden Gate Park called Dancing in the Park.
Mm.
It's performed in front of the band shell. We mm-hmm. set up a stage. And I invite, 20, 30 dance companies from around the Bay Area to come and perform with us on that stage. And this year we have a good sampler of the different dance styles that mm-hmm. are performed and worked on in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite a great afternoon event. It starts at 1 p.m. and goes until 4:30 p.m. It's admission free, outdoor. Bring your picnic and sit down and enjoy, 3.5 hours of dance.
Excellent, excellent. And that's an event where anyone can just show up. They don't need tickets or anything, correct?
Nothing.
Just show up.
Sit down and take it in.
Excellent, excellent. And then after that, what do you have in the offing?
So then we go into the fall. So this is sort of dancing in the park is usually the end of each season.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we go into the fall, and we have emerging choreographers in the fall, which is sort of our mentoring program for young dance makers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right into Nutcracker Suites, which opens early December and goes all month in December. And then we're back in the spring.
Excellent. And if people want to find out more about what your company is doing and the events, how do they go about doing that?
They go to mfdpsf.org.
Say that again.
That's our website.
Say that again.
And there's information on there. They can also follow me on Facebook or Instagram, Mark Feringer, FOEHRINGER.
All right.
That's a good way to also stay connected.
Well, Mark Feringer, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having us. I know it was a last minute thing, but I was really happy to do it.
I'm super excited that you were able to do it. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. There's so much going on, so much dance. We are so fortunate that artists choose to be here and create here and give their art to you to enjoy. So if you're not doing any of these things, that is a conscious decision on your part, because it's all right there. As Auntie Mame said, life is a smorgasbord and some poor suckers are starving to death. You don't need to starve. Go out there and dive into the deliciousness of dance. It's about time for me to shove off. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.